Imagine enrolling in seminary and training for full-time vocational ministry. Given that privilege, you'd likely take courses in the Greek language. You'd study theology and how to preach. And while these are essential disciplines to master, anyone who invests their life in church ministry must discover the powerful virtue Jesus modeled. Can you guess which virtue that might be? Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll teaches from John chapter 13 in a message he delivered to the pastors in training at Dallas Theological Seminary. Chuck titled his talk, "Ministry is a Four-Letter Word."
Before I get underway with what I have to say, I want to make a few candid comments about something you may rarely hear from someone who speaks in our seminary chapel. And that is, what goes through the mind and the heart of an individual before coming here to speak? As I drive the distance from where we live, I just happened to check it this morning, a little over 18 miles to the north of here in the city of Frisco. Between there and here, I'm thinking about one thing especially. And that is, give me the words to say, Lord, that will not be forgotten, so that they are clear and they make sense and they resonate in such a way that these who are studying here will remember them long after your years of training have passed. I thought of it when I first got up this morning, which was very early. I get up early and usually go to bed a little early. And last night was a little different, but normally go to bed early, get up early. And while I was up early this morning, I thought the same thing. I remembered when I was a student and would come to chapel, mixing this with a busy schedule, and I know all of you have that, you face that. Most of the chapels I've long since forgotten. Some of those messages, I will never forget. I can almost give them to you verbatim. And they came sometime from a faculty member, occasionally from a guest on the campus, sometime from a former faculty member, and then from Dr. Walvoord or Dr. Campbell, who would occasionally speak. But there was something about certain messages that stuck. And it isn't that they were all that creative or eloquent, but they struck a nerve that was very relevant to life. Not just student life, but life in ministry, life that would be lived on as I have lived it in the years that have passed. I am grateful for those messages especially. I am. And some of the statements that were made, I have repeated again and again. Haven't always given credit for the source, though I should have, but they have literally become so much a part of my vocabulary, of my ministry, that they just kind of roll out. And everywhere I've served, I began at Grace Bible Church in Dallas, then I went to New England, I was in Waltham, Massachusetts at a free church, and I came back to Irving for about 4 years, and I went out to California, to Fullerton, where we were for 23 years. We returned here, and then began the church here a little over 20 years ago, and been here at the seminary now another these 25 years and returning. But in all those years and in all those places, I've not forgotten something that was said or some things that were said by various individuals. And I hope today will be one of those messages. I always hope that. And today I especially hope this one rings with a relevance and a significance that you take with you, because it has everything to do with your ministry, wherever it will be, and with whom it will, whoever it will be, for the rest of your years. I hope that you wake up some morning and remember the message of this day. I hope as your day unfolds, you'll recall on another occasion, oh, I remember Swindoll said so-and-so, or I remember hearing in chapel. It didn't matter that I said it. It's that you heard it here, and it, again, struck a note that was so significant you couldn't forget it. That's what I hope will be true today. Now, you're a tough bunch to talk to, because you've heard a lot of things, and I know your mind is on other things. That's understandable. That's not a criticism. You've got lots of stuff going on, and some of you are thinking about that, and a number of you are getting closer to graduation, and you're wondering about that. I didn't have a clue where I would go, what I'd be involved in. Didn't have a clue. Certainly for the first 3 years, and not much better on that last year, until I came pretty close to the end and some opportunities opened up, and I was then I had to make some decisions. These are notes. I use notes, by the way. I know you're taught not to. No, come on, you guys. You'll see someday you'll need them. And right now you don't, so do what you should do while you're here, and then I sort of say dump all that and do what you got to do. You know, no, I still use a lot of the things I learned. Many of the things I've kind of taught myself over the years. When you preach a lot, you better have something there, or you'll get it mixed up with what you were preaching on 2 days ago, or what you're planning on talking on tomorrow afternoon at that gathering. Anyway, I want to talk to you about your love life. Jesus talked to his men, in his case, his 12, about their love life. And he surprised them. I think Jesus often surprised those disciples. They weren't the brightest bulbs in the room to start with, and except for Judas, he was probably the sharpest of the group. And they were ready to react rather than absorb and act. Oh, what a change came over them when the Spirit of God moved in at Pentecost and revolutionized them. But that's another subject. Right now, they're confused, because his hour has come. They don't know that, but they're going to find it out. And when they hear that, it troubles them, because all they can think of is how they can go on without him, or the impossibility of that, because they've watched him all through those years of training, and now they're hearing what they don't want to hear. I'm about to leave. But before he leaves, this is what's on my heart today for you out of John 13. Before the feast of Passover, Jesus, knowing that his hour had come, he's down to the wire, we would say. It's soon curtains. It's soon the cross. And he knows that. He knows within a matter of hours there will be torture like he's never known before. And this man of sorrows will reach a limit that one can only imagine. Knowing that the hour has come, I love this, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. That last phrase, eis telos agapisen autous, unto the end he loved them. Sounds like to the end of his life, but it's more than that. I agree with Merrill Tenney. He was a dean of the graduate school at Wheaton for years, wrote this. The significance is not that he loved them to the last of his life, but that he loved them to the uttermost degree of which he was capable. He loved them passionately. Our kids would say he loved them to the max. He loved them with everything that was in him. It was an unconditional, concentrated, consistent love that he had for each one of them. He could have looked at any moment and said, Peter, I love you. Andrew, I love you. Matthew, I love you. Judas, I love you. Thomas, I love you. They never knew when they weren't loved. Now that's a real security. I don't know if you heard your folks tell you that. I don't remember my dad telling me. I know he did, but he was of the generation that didn't talk, didn't say it. And your dad may have been the same. My mother said it. So I was loved, but it wasn't this kind. I don't know that I ever knew this kind of love till Jesus began to mean more to me than life itself. Then I began to tap into it. But these disciples have never known a time when he didn't love them. He loved them to the extent of his ability to love. Incredible thought. During supper, John moves to that low-lying table. They're all reclining around the table. And he notices that all their feet are dirty. Nobody appointed himself as a servant at the door when it came into that upper room. So he decided it's time for me to get these feet clean. So he drew water in a basin, and he put a towel around himself. And verse 4, he got up from supper, so he didn't finish his meal. And he poured the water in the basin and began to wash their feet. He washed the feet of the one who would doubt him, named Thomas. He washed the feet of the one who would, on three occasions in public, deny him. He washed the feet of the one who would deceitfully kiss him and betray him. He washed all their feet because he loved them. And Peter, of course, resisted, and you know the story, you know this passage well. But what happened afterwards is significant for us. Verse 12. So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table, so he's finished the foot washing And he now reclines again. He said, do you know what I've done to you? Do you understand? Do you realize? His point is, do you realize the significance of this act, this demonstration of my love? You call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. Now watch this verse. There's a surprise in it. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, wash your feet, now what would you think would follow? You would think it would. He would say, you should wash my feet. I've washed your feet, now you wash mine. But the surprise was that they ought to wash one another's feet. I don't know of a true believer who wouldn't stand in line to wash the Savior's feet. I'd stand in line for days, however long it took to get to him. And when my turn came, I would just probably weep the whole time I washed his feet. But that's not what he asks, or that's not what he states. I've left you an example that you do this with one another. And I don't know that he is deliberately requiring a foot washing regularly of one another. I would venture to guess most of you have never washed anyone's feet. And I don't mean that critically. It's just usually not a part of our style of a ministry. Or maybe you do. Maybe you have. But most of the people that I minister to would not have done that. So it's not just the act of getting water and washing feet, though that is a wonderful thing to do. It's very meaningful. Sometimes it's a sort of the crowning part of a conference. And I've been to them, and you can rarely do it without tears. It's very touching. But his desire was that they would learn to really serve one another. Verse 15, I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Verse 17, if you know these things, by the way, we're really good at that verb here at this school. We're big on knowing, and that's good. Everything right about it, but the great tendency is to stop there. Jesus never stopped there. He always went on to the doing. Blessed are you if you do them. That's where real fulfillment takes place in your life. When you really serve others. Now, I think he gets to the major point, because after he has the Last Supper with them and Judas leaves into the night, we begin pick up the story at verse 31. Therefore, when he had gone out, Judas, Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him to himself, in himself, and will glorify him immediately. Little children, here it comes. Now here's our part. This is for the disciples, and indirectly it's to us. Little children, I am with you a little while longer, and so where I'm going, you cannot come, verse 34, but a new commandment. The Vulgate reads, mandatum novum, a new mandate. This isn't just a neat idea. This isn't an option among other things. This is a mandate. This is essential for ministry. And to these 11, he says, this new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. He even says, as I have loved you. Remember how he loved them? Passionately, to the max, he loved them. Full on. And then he goes further to say, by this, verse 35, all will know you're my disciples if you have love for one another. One of the greatest of all defenses of the faith is love of the brothers and sisters in the family. I want to challenge you in this area. Because I think if you attempt to minister without love, you're going to hit bottom really quick. And you'll learn to fake it. You didn't get even good at that. But if you really want to serve flocks that God sends you to and people God has you touch and individuals who come to you across your path, love is the ticket. It's a commandment, a new commandment. It's a fresh touch in ministry from this time on. Loving God all the way through, all the way back, you can trace it to the Shema. But here, it's loving one another. It's loving your brothers and your sisters. It's loving your congregation. One of the best things we ever did at Stonebriar is to ask both Dr. Stan Toussaint and Dr. Howie Hendricks to join our elder team. And they graciously, without hesitation, were willing to do that. I didn't know if they could or if they would, but we needed them at that time. I won't go into the reasons why, but their presence was a benediction, not only on our church, but on our team of leaders. And one of the great things about it is I got to spend private time with each one of them. And on one occasion, I said to Dr. Toussaint, "What's the secret? You've ministered all over the world and you've touched lives and everybody loves you and you just have a way with people." And he smiled and said, "Well," he said, I can boil it down to two simple statements. Maybe your faculty members will remember his words. He said, "Chuck, teach the truth and love the people. Teach the truth and love the people." And I said to him, "Am I doing that?" He said, "You're doing that." I said, "Sometimes it's tough to do that." He said, "I didn't say it was easy." I said, that's the calling. Teach the truth, love the people. Now you're going to learn the teaching part here, but I'm going to lay it on the line. You're not going to learn the loving part here. You got to learn that on your own. And the avenues God uses to teach you about loving others will be very unique to each one of you, as it has been for me. Because loving God's people, since it is such a apologetic in our world, since it is one of the ways the unsaved realize Jesus is Lord and that he makes a difference in lives, is how we love each other. The enemy goes to town when we fight with each other. The devil loves it when there are church fights and squabbles. And there's just a history of that. But how great to be around congregations that love each other and are loved by the pastor and love him in return. And there is a dynamic that accompanies that. There is an affection, there is a warmth, there is a willingness to forgive, to work with, to serve, to spend time alongside. You don't feel like it's a sacrifice, you feel like it's a privilege to be there with them because you love them. Love does that. Love gets you past the barriers of the flesh. And Jesus, knowing that, gives them a command to love one another.
Speaking to a receptive audience of students and faculty at Dallas Theological Seminary, you're listening to a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, "Ministry is a Four-Letter Word," and this is Insight for Living. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. Now, in the event you didn't get to hear Chuck's entire presentation, you can easily access his teaching online in order to catch up. And you'll find a number of complete series archived on our convenient mobile app as well. Please take advantage of these handy resources by going to insight.org/connect. Even though this new series from Chuck has never before been shared on the broadcast, we're confident God will use it to inspire church leaders around the world. This is based on experience, because we hear from pastors and Bible teachers who tell us their personal stories. These comments come through phone calls, letters, through social media, and emails. Every single one reminds us that God can multiply the truth when it sinks deeply into the life of someone who shepherds a church. It's all made possible because of the partnership we enjoy with listeners like you. And today, we're asking God to help us add more monthly companions to our family of supporters. A monthly companion is someone who gives a donation every month, providing stability and strength as we continue to provide this daily program on your station. To become a monthly companion today, call us. If you're listening in the United States, dial 1-800-772-8888 or go to insight.org/monthly companion. To say thank you to our first-time monthly companions today, we'd like to send you a brand new book Chuck has written. It's called What If God Has Other Plans? Each of the 12 chapters in this book addresses a specific problem, such as pain, loss, and loneliness. Again, when you become a monthly companion today, we'd be happy to send you the book, What If God Has Other Plans? If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. And online, go to insight.org/monthly companion. Tomorrow, Chuck Swindoll continues his message called Ministry is a Four-Letter Word, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Ministry is a Four-Letter Word, and the sound recording were copyrighted in 2019 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.